Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago. Danny Burke is alive and well and ready to roll. We are busy today. We are excited today. I'm jacked. 1 hour from now, we'll get caught up with the Pirate. Mike Leach, coach of Washington State, world traveler. We'll talk to him about artwork. Maybe some hotels. It's that time of year. You're getting ready for vacation. School's out tomorrow. At least it is in Lincoln. Danny's like, bruh, I've been out for 2 weeks. And you're looking good, Danny. Well rested.
Appreciate that.
You just living life.
Yeah, that's right.
Graduated. we'll get into that with Coach Leach, whether or not fifth graders deserve graduation celebration. It's in my craw a bit. I'm happy to be gone and be with my family tomorrow, but I like what I do. So we'll talk to Coach about that. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey will join us. HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Get his take on something that he's worked really hard on and done just a great job. Most intriguing, Huskers. We spent some time on it Monday. We'll talk to Derek about it as Adrian Martinez came in at number one. Just some of the dynamics with that. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. It's nice enough to go swing the club, so Shuey's going to be in. Coach Leach in 1 hour. We'll talk to Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer. Jay's used to be with us Monday through Friday. Jay is awesome to give us a few minutes to talk a little black shirts, and we'll get into that in a minute. And also his take on the NFL and Roger Goodell's statement. And listen, man, I'm trying to take your pulse on the anthem stuff. I mean, we're going on two seasons now of it with whether you're wore out by it or not. Not patriotism itself or not standing by the flag itself, but the topic of. Okay. So we'll get Jay's take on that as a guy who spent 5 years in the league. What's he think of the ruling by the NFL? Myself, Danny Burke, will chime in on that as well. You're welcome to spend some time on it. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House. Let's do that, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Tweet at us, at Schmidt _ radio, at Hail Varsity, at Danny Burke 5. True or false, yes or no, since it's kind of a travelers-themed Wednesday with Leach, Frost is crushing the Grand Canyon, or did crush the Grand Canyon, and Marty Smith was down there. It'll be on Marty Smith's America. Yay or nay, would you like to have a beer with Marty Smith? I'm not saying I can make that happen. I'm saying, would you? Because dude seems cool. And when I'm driving in Saturday mornings, Marty and McGee are on before the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. And I get a kick out of them, dude. Just two good old boys telling stories. There's some sports mixed in there from time to time, but I like listening to them. I get a kick out of them. But Marty and Frost doing the old Grand Canyon hiking. It sounds like it was a pretty monstrous and treacherous feat.
Yeah, it looked awesome. I think they are going to get you out there next time. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah. Someday we'll get Marty on the show.
That too. That'll be awesome. No, he seems like a great guy. Kind of just seems like one of those real dudes who just happens to be put in front of a microphone. You know,
just like sports.
Right, exactly.
He's doing the dream job we all want.
Exactly.
No, absolutely. That's totally it. So I want to get into this, and I don't know if Marty Smith asked Scott Frost about the black shirts as they were making their way up the final climb with ascension back to the top of the Grand Canyon. I'm getting this picture in my mind, right, of hiking down there in that heat. good luck and God bless. But Kevin Suits, friend of the show, Ted 11 sports director, he did his sit down with Frost, and the topic of the black shirts came up. We've talked to Coach McBride about it, every coaching change there's been, right, the last 10 years. And I kind of want to get first the question and answer here from Scott Frost and then dive into it with you. And if you're worried about it as a fan, we'll get into some of the anthem and the NFL stuff here in a bit. Yes, an incredible shocker last night with the Rockets over the Warriors. Danny was probably on the right side of that thing financially. Casino Danny was here. But here is Kevin Suits to Scott Frost with his interview. And here's your answer, and here's what you know going into this fall of 2018, this year one of Scott Frost regarding the black shirts, because it is dominated and it's been the topic of conversation in past years with different defensive coordinators with all the transition that's gone on.
Scott, will you guys hand out black shirts this year?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about this, but to me a black shirt means more than just being a starter on the defense. It means somebody that's tough, that's a leader, that's committed to team first and not themselves, that has unmatched effort. You know, the guys that I played with that wore black shirts, it was more than just being a guy that was on the field. So we're going to go into fall with nobody on our team having a black shirt, and it's going to be tough to earn those, but when they do earn them, I want it to mean something.
Listen, this is a Nebraskan. This is your coach. This is your return of the prodigal son. Okay. If anyone gets it and has never worn a black shirt, it's Scott Frost. It's a mentality. It needs to mean something. It's not that you're just a starter. Typically, look, you're a starter, you get a black shirt. Well, in past years, the standard to start has been pretty incredible, okay? And you just go look down the list of guys who started for a year or multiple years, what'd they go on and do? Well, they went on and had some sort of award, likely, okay? Or maybe they weren't an award winner, but they still started and they were great at their spot. And they were probably keeping out future NFL talent. What I mean by keeping out, they were backing up said black shirt of a certain year. That's the standard. It's guys that are super tough. They're leaders. Their effort and their mentality is team first, but it's to never die is the best way to put it. And it's to make sure everyone comes along with you. We all go home or nobody goes home, right? That type of, and I look at, you know, Barrett Rood. I look at Peter. I look at Wistrom. I look at Jay Moore. I look at some of the 80s Huskers where you had just sick talent stacked upon sick talent. Mike Brown, Ralph Brown, those dudes that just, they went out, they made plays. They made game-changing plays in huge games. But they were just doing it all. They were always on. They're always on. That's the standard. Now, if you ask some black shirts in past years, it's been a participation award. All right, I guess we got to have 11 of you out here. And the guide says X, Y, and Z since I'm not from here and don't get it. And I've just been brought in as coordinator. Okay, you're a starter. Here you go. You have 3 pass breakups, no interceptions, and are routinely 15 yards off of the receiver. Here's your black shirt. That's been talked about, I'm sure, with this new coaching staff to some of the corners, let alone the linebackers and defensive linemen that have allowed 300 rushing yards to Wisconsin the last 2 years. It's a mentality and standard. And what the standard was to get a black shirt the last 5 years, I don't even want to say 5. I would say 3 for sure. was way different than what it took to get a black shirt when Coach McBride was there. More from Suitsy and Frost on the black shirt topic.
So you don't have a certain template for what it's going to require to do on the field to get one? Where you can sit down after practice and check the box and be like, yep, they earned it today.
No, I don't think it's as easy as just checking off some requirements to earn a black shirt. I think it'll be obvious to everybody when somebody's done the things that they need to do to earn their black shirt.
It'll be obvious to them where they get up to a certain level. I think hearing those two parts of this interview that Suitsy did, Kevin Suits with Scott Frost, you got to be excited, man, because you're not just preaching a popular bullet point that's been talked about and it's not being recycled. It's a moment of clarity to you, the fan, that here's what Nebraska football is going to be and get back to being under the Scott Frost watch. And if it's not up to snuff, it'll get up to snuff. And it'll stay at a certain level. It'll be maintained at a high level. That's what you got to be fired up about, man, is that once they get up and rowing and going, oh, I just said rowing, slap me. Once they get up and going, the understanding of what it's going to take to maintain will make you a good football team. Stuart Mandel's got his list of top 25 coaches out there. Scott Frost does make that list. That's not shocking. That's kind of the body of work of Frost, and also one year that was super awesome last year. Danny, you're a student, man. You're a former student. You're a guy that came from Chicago to Nebraska. You understand what the black shirt is, or at least you knew about it. Hey, that's the nickname for the defense. And am I wrong? Did it seem like anybody and anyone could get a black shirt the last couple of years?
No, you said it perfectly right. And my high school football team actually adapted that same mentality. We had the black shirts. And the way that I look at it is we kind of had the old school mentality versus the last 3 years era where you were just saying, oh, you're
on the
defense.
And this isn't to like shoot Banker up. I like Banker. I mean, Banker was trying to do right. This is more like last year, I'm finger pointing.
Right. So, but it was like, if you're on the defense, okay, we're just going to keep up the tradition. Here you go. Here's your shirt. It wasn't like what Frost is saying, you got to earn it and really do it, because on my team, it'd be like, it could fluctuate. You, like, the spots could go in and out. If the defense does really bad that week, no black shirts. It's not just starting 11, you get it no matter what. It's you really have to earn it. And I feel like that's exactly what Frost is going to have here, which in essence brings more meaning to it and what I would assume restores the same mentality that it had back in the 90s when it was originated.
Well, it was. And Charlie's explained it, what a black shirt is, what it means. I mean, it's a mentality and a mystique versus an actual shirt. It's a way of playing that represents the shirts. And it did shift. Now, Pelini got annoyed with the topic with how he did it. In Bo's mind, it was more of, he didn't want to exclude people per se, because you can be contributing at a high level. But he was kind of really pissy about the whole thing, just being questioned and asked about it. And the fact that it was a detail that people fixated and spent so much time on. One thing that probably wore him out a little bit. I mean, it's a little thing, but it's a big thing to people here. I mean, you used to have 15-year-olds that can recite what it means. Now it's like, you hope some of the 15-year-olds are going to get back into becoming Nebraska football fans. Just saying, because they've been tuned out of Nebraska football because of the crooked numbers on the scoreboard. We'll see. But no, that was pretty interesting on that. Let's talk NFL for a second. Roger Goodell and the statement he made, and here is what's going to happen. It's in reference to on-field protests, the unpatriotic perception of the league. You have two choices. You can stay in the locker room, or you can come out for the anthem, team and personnel. You will be fined and appropriately disciplined if you protest on the field, approved by all 32 teams. there you go. Now, the Jets co-owner has offered to cover and pay for any fines of his players or teams if there is a protest. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you want to talk about it any further? And really, this needs to happen so there's no more on-field protests. If you're upset about social injustice, and I get that, there's a platform for you to speak about it, or more importantly, do something about it in the community. But you're not going to be on the field protesting. You're not going to be turning your back on the flag. And you're going to show and stand, you're going to show respect and stand for the flag. That's a rule that the NFL has a right to make, and a player who disagrees with that has the right to stay in the locker room. But it, to me, this is more of a business interest versus a they're so shocked and appalled about being unpatriotic. They can be frustrated about it looking unpatriotic and being unpatriotic, but it comes down to revenue and money in a business decision. That's why he made this. We get caught up with Derek Peterson. Great to be with you on a Wednesday at Hale Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HaleVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Less than an hour away, the Pirate Mike Leach going to be with us. We'll talk about vacationing. That's what we do in May with him. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, great to have you in. Welcome in Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson with us of Hale Varsity. At Dr. Petey 15, follow him, read him, and find him, HaleVarsity.com or on Twitter. Derek, what's good, man? How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. I am all right. There's so much to get to. And we spent a minute or two or several on Scott Frost and some of his comments about the black shirts and not handing them out to start the year. And maybe they get them, maybe they don't. And that was off of Suitsi's sit down with them. What's your takeaway here? I have kind of the utmost confidence in the who, the what, and the why he's doing it. But as a guy who knows about the black shirts, but also covered Oklahoma and knows about college football from a different point of view as well, do you think this will work with the media and work with the fan base? Think they'll be okay with it?
From what my Twitter says, no. I mean, I guess I have an unpopular opinion on this because I'm fine with the Bo Pelini method, actually.
Okay.
We had a question in our mailbag on site a couple of weeks ago that was basically like, do you use them as like a carrot on the stick? And my response was, I mean, if you feel like they haven't earned it by the time, you know, the first game happens, then they don't have them by the time the first game happens.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the tradition and all that stuff, and I know Frost does too, but I think what he's trying to get at is that they mean a little bit something more than just having a different color jersey when you're at practice, and you've got to, I mean, you have to respect it, and part of respecting it is living up to, I mean, what it means to be a black shirt.
I'm all good with him hanging on as long as he wants to hang on. If they've reached a level and a mentality, then it's time to give him out. But I think there's such a long ways to go, in his opinion, for these guys to really get it truly. And he knows it because he played against it. He won a title with those guys, you know?
Yeah. And then that's how I feel, too. You know, if he feels like they've earned it, I mean, he's the coach, give them out. But if he feels like the guys haven't earned it, then wait until they earn it.
Fair enough to me. Adrian Martinez, the most intriguing Husker on your rundown, on your list of top 10 most intriguing Huskers. Great call on that. And there's a part in your story that was just magnificent. There's more than just one part, but specifically the upside and just what he can do with his legs outweighing maybe some questions you have about his arm, the injury, and just what type of thrower he can be.
Yeah, and that's not a knock on Jebbia. No. Jebbia showed in the spring game that he can run a little bit too. He's a dual threat guy. He can be when you need him to be. But Martinez had it looks a little bit more natural. I feel like you would be able to use a little bit more of the playbook right away if he's the guy. And I feel like, you know, I think this competition is really, really close right now. I will joke with Tristan Jebbia that he's no longer in the running because of his take on Jim Halpert, Pam Beasley, and the office couples. But I think Martinez gives you, like you said, he gives you a higher upside. And I ultimately think he's the quarterback of the future. And I think when you're a team that isn't facing expectations to win big in any given season, if you have the quarterback of the future on the roster, I think you have almost an obligation at times to play him and get him ready for the future. Because anything that, and I put this in the piece, this year is about development, and it's about building a foundation, building a culture, building what Nebraska is going to be over the next 5, 6, 7 years. And so that starts at the quarterback position as well. So anything extra, anything positive that Martinez gives you is just extra on top to feel good about. So
it is some awesome gravy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I put it as sprinkles on top of the sundae.
I'm a non-sprinkles guy. Ever.
Gotta live a little.
No, I know that. But, I mean, there's just instances where no, you don't get sprinkles. You don't get ice cream. You don't win. You don't get sprinkles or ice cream. That's kind of my...
That is true.
That's my take on things, says the old man in the room.
That is true.
Listen, Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson with us, and Dr. Petey 15 on Twitter. It's where you follow him. Read him at HaleVarsity.com. Let's get into some NBA. And I know Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago, has been watching the conference finals, as have I. And there's a lot of things that can happen in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Golden State asking for a cigarette while being blindfolded. It was not one of them. That happened last night. Durant was awful, was off. Their shot selection was horrible. And they got held to 12 points. It was nuts. You predicted that, didn't you?
Yeah. Kevin Durant that I've been waiting for.
Did you have your Durant voodoo doll out?
No, I will tell you this. I was about 2 minutes away from texting you in the first quarter and asking you where you wanted your steak from, and I didn't get to watch the game because my internet was out, but I followed it on Twitter and then saw the end of it. That is the Kevin Durant that passed up a shot to pass it to a guy that wasn't open. Uh-huh. And then stand right next to him and take away his space. I mean, that's the Kevin Durant that at least people in Oklahoma City are used to. I mean, I know he went kind of supernova last year in the playoffs and they won a title. I think part of that was, I don't know, he's just really darn good. But, like, this is a Kevin Durant that I'm used to, a guy that is a little panicky in the big moments.
Their whole team was, so, though.
Yeah, it's really funny. Ethan Strauss from The Athletic had a piece today that was like four plays that really broke down why the Warriors lost. And a lot of it was just them making dumb mistakes. And I think you've seen like the cracks in their foundation this season in that they're not always ready to play when they need to be. Yeah. Like I saw it in, it was the first Oklahoma City Thunder game when they got blown out. And it was like, this is the Thunder. Like this is a rivalry, whether you think they're rivals or not. Like, this is a game that you should get up for, and they didn't get up for it. And I think there are times where they slip into some bad habits they have, and they get a little lazy, and they think that, you know, because we have three of the greatest shooters of all time, that we can compensate for it. And when you're playing a team that's as good as Houston is, because Houston is really, really good, those cracks can get exposed.
Derek, there's no doubt that Durant passing up that final shot and just, I don't know, it seemed like you said, no one wanted that ball. Klay didn't even know where to go. No one was trying to get open there, just letting him do his own thing. It was plays like that, like you mentioned, that contributed to their loss. But what I see in this loss and their previous loss is they just seem to be playing down to the Rockets' level. Not that the Rockets are playing, you know, terribly in those wins, but the Warriors could be playing so much better. Do you think it's more that they're playing down to their level, or that maybe these guys just do have some flaws and they're not going to be superhuman every single night?
I think they do have flaws. I don't know if they're playing down to any level, because I think that inherently implies that Houston is worse.
Right.
Than
it just
Golden
seems
State.
Like they get content, like in the fourth quarter. You know, they just started to settle and just chuck up threes when they could just run their offense and spend more time setting it up.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, that's something, that's a habit that they've developed over the last couple of years, is they can kind of put it in cruise a little bit and expect Curry to hit those big shots,
right,
or expect Durant to bail them out. Like, there was a play where they were trying to run, I think it's called a gaggle. This was in that Strauss piece. I'm not taking credit for this, but it's like a gaggle where they send three screeners in the same area, and the goal was to get Kevin an open shot, and he took, like, a contested fadeaway turnaround jumper late in the shot clock. I mean, like, they're not crisp right now. And I think part of that is, like, Houston was built for this Golden State team, and they have a bunch of long, rangy, switchy defenders that are, like, big-bodied so that they can bang on these guys a little bit. And I think that's, like, part of it is Houston is really, really good. And nobody is, like, I don't think anybody has taken them really seriously. I mean, like, they were the one seed, but I don't like, there were people before the series started that said Golden State was going to win this in five. Like, I don't think people have taken them as seriously as they should have. Like, they're a really good team.
They are very good, and they absolutely gutted one out where they were up, then they lost the lead. I mean, that was a monster barrage in that third quarter.
Yeah, but they took their best hit, and they kept going.
Yeah,
especially after getting blown out by 40. Like, that's impressive.
No, and there was going to be a response, no doubt, from Houston after getting embarrassed. But for them to come back after relenting, after being down by double digits, it got there, didn't it? Did they get down by 10?
Yeah, I think it was 10 at one point.
Yeah, 10 was 10, and it could have been 13 on a three, but then we go back into some of that shot selection. And Iggy not being there was big. And you're just seeing that Clay wasn't the same after his leg issue. But really, if you're asking Durant to carry him, or even Steph, they aren't going to get by the Rockets with one of those guys having to be 80% of the offense. It's going to be that they need three of the big four to step up. And they got a little too hero ballish. I mean, they looked like Houston in game one, just with, I don't want it, you take it, shot clocks at three, launch it, it's going to go down. They tried to make the spectacular play instead of the right play so many times last night, and that's not how they won. And I'm sure that Kerr and his Steve Kerr way is still chewing their backside for it. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I'm done. I got about 60 seconds, but I was going to ask.
I was just going
to interrupt you again.
I was just going to say that this is a knock that I've had on Kevin for a while, like going back to his Thunder days, is there are times where he will just rely on his talent instead of execution and game plan. And there are a lot of times where it's going to work really well, like it did last year when they just blew through everybody. And there are times when it's not going to work, like last night.
I still like my steaks that are New York strip, or we can do ribeye. I mean, I'm still good. I'm still good. 30 seconds. What's coming up on Hail Varsity with you, bud?
I have been buried in spreadsheets for like 2 weeks, ever since I got back from Oklahoma, working on possession and 10 data for the yearbook. So, and I've read a couple of the other stories that are going to go into the yearbook, and this is going to be a really, 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 really good feature.
Magazine. Oh, it'll be awesome. Out in June, the yearbook, your college football Bible, if you're a Nebraska fan, with Hail Varsity. Derek, we'll get caught up again, brother. Thanks for the time.
Sounds good, man. Always enjoy it.
Awesome. Good stuff. Derek Peterson, Dr. PD15. Follow him on Twitter. Read him on HailVarsity.com. Golf with Shuey next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
I love this time of Wednesday. It is Wilderness Ridge Golf time with Mike Shuart. Shuey, I love the orange polo. It's gorgeous.
Okay, state colors, right?
Well, it's not burnt.
No Texas.
Orange. There's no Texas.
No, thank you.
I know. This is not, someone leaves keeps leaving a Texas Longhorn coffee cup in here. I'm not going to rat anybody out.
That's not good.
Hooks. But
that's not good.
No, it's all. I think it's used for. Well, they degrade it a lot. WildernessRidgeGolf.com is where you can log on. Get your tee time booked. It's beautiful. It's summertime. It's time to play 9 at the Talent Course or 18 on the Championship Course. It's time to have a classic cocktail on the deck. It's time to go to Sunday brunch after you finish 9 at Wilderness Ridge. And Shuey, talk to me, man. I know it's school's out tomorrow. It's fantastic. And then you've got all sorts of opportunities for the kids to come learn how to be better than dad for putting.
That's right.
Or better with the approach shot. Or better than mom and dad off the tee box. Tell me what's going on at Wilderness here with juniors, with them divot dogs that are champs.
That's right.
And with the girls' camps that are open here. So much going on.
Yeah. You can tell it's school's out, man, and summer's here because the camps are starting. So starting Monday, we have our first junior camp. So that's Monday through Friday. One of those little youngsters. We'll be out getting a week-long basically experience in golf. So it's really fun. We have about we'll have anywhere from 60 to 80 kids.
That's awesome.
That will run through there. I think there's still a few spots open. Not many. It fills up pretty fast.
434-5106 if you want to last second, see if there's
room left.
Room left.
Yeah. I checked, and there's a few, but not many. It fills up fast. So it's really fun. I mean, we have a week long, and we take them through all the different skills that you do. We have putting contests. We have chipping. We have full swing. We have Gary the Hippo.
Tell me, we've talked about, has Gary calmed down a bit?
Gary has his moments. He's pretty good. They get pretty excited.
Give me the theory behind Gary the Hippo.
So Gary's a big pink blow-up hippo. And Gary loves to eat, man. And we have these little things that they're called birdie balls, and they look like little marshmallows. And the kids hit him in his mouth. So it's all about learning how to feed Gary, man. You got to hit it in his mouth. And Gary loves marshmallows.
It's so good.
And that's one of the most popular stations, obviously. Everybody wants to go feed Gary.
Gary the Hippo.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty fun. Then our divot dogs, they start on Thursday. That's our first practice. We got a full roster, so got to do a lot of work to defend our title.
Yes, those divot dogs. Give folks a little oral history here on the divot dogs, what's been going on, how long you've been at it. It's awesome.
So, yeah, it's a really, really fun format. So it's kind of a low-key way to get kids playing golf in a team format. They play a best ball, and so it's not as stressful. We have a lot of fun, parent interaction with it. So we go out and we play different clubs around. We have a tournament, and then we play throughout the year. If you earn enough points, then you qualify for the playoffs. If you make it through the first round of the playoffs, then you make it to the championship. Only 4 teams make it to the championship, and then they play for the infamous belt. The team golf belt.
That's good.
Yeah, it looks like WWF belt, man. It's really cool.
With lots of bling on it.
A lot of bling on it.
I like it. And the belt always, I mean, is it a traveling Stanley Cup thing? If for some reason it's not residing at Wilderness Ridge, there's lots of spotlights somewhere at a different club claim it.
That's right. We're going to keep it this year, though.
Well, you're going to go back-to-back, and you're calling your shot right now.
That's right.
Good. So if and give me the ages of the Divot Dogs, the youth golf league that they're in. They get built up. They get a chance to feed Gary the Hippo, putting, marshmallows, all that good stuff. But just the development phase that is so key and fun at that age that can really create golf long-term for some of these kids.
Yeah, fun is the key word because you got to get them out there having fun doing it. So then they look at golf as, man, this is a lot of fun. Man. I really want to go to the golf course and do the things that they do. And we get them. So our camps ages basically, we'll have some 7-year-olds all the way up to 13-year-olds, some 14s in there. Most of the kids are right in that 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old age. Get some older groups, some younger groups. Divot Dogs, kind of the same. 13 is the oldest you can be to play in the Divot Dogs. So once you basically turn 13, or turn 14, actually, you age out of that. So, and again, like you said, and it's the key, because if you can have a lot of fun doing it, that gets kids interested in golf, gets them having fun playing golf, so they want to keep doing it. So, and that's the key. If your youngster comes to you and says, let's go to the golf course, then you got them. If you got to always keep putting him in the car and dragging him there, it's like, then that's the fun aspect of it, you know? So if you can have them want to go to the golf course and play, so, and then they'll just keep doing it, and it'll be a game for life. That's the coolest part about it. I mean, it's a game for life. You mm-hmm. you play it till you can't really walk anymore. Mm-hmm. So,
Shuey, I want to see Gary with you next week. Can you bring Gary the Hippo?
No, Gary's pretty big.
Okay.
Gary's huge. He's about as big as this room.
Really?
Yeah, he's giant.
Can we get a picture of Gary the Hippo?
Yeah, I'll get a picture. Bring okay. it. We'll send it out.
Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago, is intrigued here about Gary the Hippo.
Yeah, do you spend time yourself there, Shuey, just hitting it into Gary or
oh,
what?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to come check it out sometime.
They're you best, can't help it, man.
They're
you
best friends. Gary the Hippo and Mike Shuhart.
We're going to need a selfie of you guys or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, get it there.
We'll get one.
Let's talk about the girls' camp that's coming up.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's in July, so it's the first time we've done this. Kind of looked at not so much a need, but a little bit of a need and just an opportunity. And this is a camp designed just for girls that are going into high school
okay.
or that are in high school that want to just continue the development of their game. So it's 3 days. We do a lot of teaching, instruction, little on-course things to hopefully get them a little bit better knowledge and understanding of how to make themselves better. You know, some different practice techniques that they can use. Because a lot of them, hopefully some of them will already be on a high school team. So it's some things they can do to develop themselves to get better, and some of the things they can carry with them when they're practicing to make themselves better. So this is new for this year. So, and it's girls only. So kind of a specific group that we're targeting. So we'll see how that goes. We're excited about it. Very excited.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you've got kids that are divot dogs that a little more seasoning, a little more tutoring can really pay off for their high school programs.
Yeah. And it's
along with the coaching, obviously.
The whole programs that we do, they have such a nice, and that's how we design them, in hopes that we're able to keep our hands on and involved mm-hmm. as they continue to develop, you know, from a six-year-old. And we have a peewee program that we started this year. Peewees.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. It's like herding cats, actually. But that's going to be really fun. So we get our hands on them from peewees all the way up through high school and beyond.
That's good. Mike Shuhart is in. It's Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Hail Varsity Radio, wildernessridgegolf.com. And next week, you got junior camp going, Divot Dogs, and the girls camp in July. Find out more, wildernessridgegolf.com. A few more minutes when we come back on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to be back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio. We are 10 minutes away. Pirate warning. Mike Leach, the pirate, going to be with us.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy's right. We'll talk artwork in Taiwan with him.
Oh, boy.
Summer vacations, graduation. A fifth grade graduation should count as something that's celebrated versus expected. That's where we're at. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shuhart's in. A quick word on our friends at Sauter Heyman. Rick and the gang are there for you when it comes to birthdays and anniversaries. They're the exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds here in Nebraska. Pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds that are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. That gives you savings. It gives you beauties. It gives you selection. They're 100% sustainable. They're eco-friendly. They're 10 to 40% less than earth-mined diamonds. Go see Rick. Go see Sauter Heyman today. SauterHeyman.com, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, or out west in Grand Island. Shuey, you're a huge college football fan.
Amen.
Scott Frost is where on the top 25 list of Stuart Mandel's top 25 coaches in college football?
Where is he at?
Where do you think? Give me a number.
11.
11. Good argument. I think he has Scott in at 25.
But barely.
But you just have, I mean, there's 120 programs to choose from. You've got Saban, Urban, and Dabo, all have won titles. All are kind of at the pinnacle. Could you find five coaches you'd take in front of Saban, Urban, Dabo? And could you find three or four more coaches that you'd take in front of Frost? And that's, I mean, I look at like the coaching setup, and I look at like Shaw at Stanford. I think it's really good. I know Harbaugh's kind of a whack job, but I think he's a good coach.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I would take Harbaugh over Frost.
Sure.
No. Shaw's done a lot. Shaw's really good. Gundy's been pretty good since you're wearing some Oklahoma That's State right. orange. But Frost, for this fit, there's no better.
No question.
No better fit selection choice what you get. But just coaches out there. The Bishop's pretty good up at Washington.
Not bad. Franklin, Penn State.
See, and you know what, though? I'll be interested, and I think he's great because he won at Vanderbilt, right? No one
exactly.
wins at Vanderbilt, except Uncle Jerry did, briefly. And he got the Vanderbilt and go to LSU, man, where it's not hard to do well in comparison. But Franklin was gifted a lot by Bill O'Brien. Okay, James Franklin was smart enough to give the ball to Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Bill O'Brien, like briefly after the scandal, still got Saquon Barkley to Penn State. I'll give James Franklin credit for McSorley because I think he's a great quarterback. And Kosicki and then some of the defensive players Penn State's had. I think Franklin's really good. But I think Franklin just cleans up because he has spent a lot of time in that Chesapeake Northeast region before going to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, he recruits well.
He's incredible.
That's part of it.
He's so good.
The better your talent.
He's super organized.
Yeah. You know, he manages. He gets them and he manages them well. So it's like you got great talent in there. It makes you look like a great coach.
Right. I think D'Antonio's good. I think what he's done at Sparty's been really good.
Yeah.
And then as much as like you grudge about it, I mean, Ferentz has been pretty good recently.
A lot of it is your staff, man. It's how good is your staff.
Your staff makes
you look pretty good.
They do.
That's what I'm excited about, Frost. He's a great coach. He's got great staff, too.
He does. Mike Shewhart. Mike Leach is next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Mike Leach is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So, Coach, tell me about your trip abroad. We always catch up after spring ball, and thank you kindly for the time. But you are the world traveler. I love hearing about your stories. I loved hearing about Cuba. I loved hearing about, not Australia, but you went somewhere for rugby one time.
Oh, to Wales, yeah.
Yeah, Wales. And now
New Zealand.
Yes, New Zealand.
I saw the All Blacks as well. Okay, so we were in, basically, I was with a delegation of, a couple state senators and a state representative. And we were, obviously there's a lot of connections between Asia and the state of Washington, and there's a lot of business done. And those guys had an interest in expanding that. You know, me personally and Washington State has an interest in, getting more students at Washington State and elevating the name of Washington State. And it would really be a cool deal if we had a number of, students from these countries, foreign students from these countries. And professors went back and forth. So it was an opportunity for me to help elevate that, even though for a lot of the elements of it, I was tagging along. So it was really cool that way. And so we got to go to Cambodia and Taiwan. Now, Cambodia not had a great deal of connections United States recently, but it sure would be nice if a business relationship and some with Cambodia and some students up here at Washington State. And so I had the opportunity to go there. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous country. It has some third world qualities to it. The government officials, I think, are very eager to a better relationship with the U.S. and economically and things. And then went to Angkor Wat, which is all those fancy ancient temples like that are on Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Just gorgeous. Look up on your phone or wherever you can, the floating villages of Cambodia. One of the most amazing sights I've seen.
That's pretty awesome. Now, the question asked, and when I think of art museums, I think of the montage from Ferris Bueller's, the movie, okay?
Oh, now, this was wild. So this was in Taiwan.
Right, the meat-shaped stone. Did you feel anything other than hunger when you saw it?
Well, we were in. Now, I don't know how much the artist worked on that stone. And obviously, you know, since we were kids, people are picking up. This was in the National Museum in Taiwan.
Right.
You know, there was that. And then that jade sculpture, which I think was a cabbage or something. You know, the meat stone, you know, since we were kids, everybody's picked up rocks and said, hey, this looks like this or that looks like that. That meat stone did look like a piece of pork with the skin still on it. And then probably even more prestigious than that, I just can't remember. It seems to me it was cabbage. But regardless of whether I get my vegetables confused here, either way, it was an impressive sculpture, but what struck me was they have the enthusiasm around that, like, say, the Mona Lisa. I mean, this is one of those deals where you have to wait to get in there. You know, you have to all kinds of heads trying to look at the same exhibit. And how these two found their way to the top, I'm still kind of searching for the answer to that. It was impressive, and part of what was impressive is you drew from the enthusiasm of everybody wanting to see it. I don't know how they were selected as the most distinguished.
Mike Leach, Washington State head coach, with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Great to get caught up with the coach back from his tour abroad. Coach, I want to sneak in a football question here. And what is your take? You played Oregon for a number of years. Coach Frost is getting things rolling, and he was hiking the Grand Canyon yesterday. I'll ask you about hiking the Grand Canyon in a second, if you've done it or not. But what kind of wows you about the Oregon offense and the tempo they ran at? That's the goal here at Nebraska.
Well, you know, they don't have a ton of plays. They just fire them at you really fast. And it's kind of important to them that, you know, they have a quarterback that can run. They'll be more effective if that quarterback's a good runner. You know, and we had pretty good luck with the Oregon offense. You know, I mean, it's like they're going to score some points, and they're going to big play in. They're going to get a lick in on you. I just think it was a good, solid overall offense that attacked the whole field. And, you know, and they get it in the hands of their key guys, and they have the ability to get it in the hands of a variety of their key guys. And then Oregon was so fast, you know.
Yeah. Coach, I want to ask you about, okay, I'm looking at your Twitter feed, and you sent out a tweet a while back about haunted highways and byways. Have you ever stayed in a haunted house?
Shoot, I think my mother-in-law's house is haunted, but I mean, she's a great lady, but
okay,
there's this one bedroom that's got some wild stuff.
What's gone on? What happened there?
Oh, you know, just I guess the furniture belonged to a relative and stuff, and it's really more of a vibe than anything else. But there was a room I stayed in at the Roosevelt Hotel years ago in Los Angeles. It's in Hollywood, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. And the person at the desk said that the room was supposed to be haunted. And then you know, I stayed up all night hoping I'd see something. I didn't stay up all night. I mean, I'd sleep and try to pretend to sleep so the ghost would think I was asleep. So so I could catch them, but no such luck. I think the ghosts are onto those that want to see them, and so I think they make it difficult. But I never saw a ghost there, but the room's supposed to be haunted, and people, I guess, have either run out of that room because they had a bad experience or try to rent that room because they're hoping they see one. Me, I just got there late, and that's all that was left, and they were trying to not rent it, but I already had a reservation, and there was a certain amount of negotiation between the girl at the desk and the manager as to whether they were going to let me in there, because I guess somebody'd had a tough time and left or something. But I'm stuck there in L.A. at 10 p.m., have to get up early in the morning, and it's hard enough to get hotels as it was. And I just made it clear I was going to either sleep in their lobby or I was going to sleep in the room that they'd promised me that I'd reserved 2 weeks before. And so they sent me up to the haunted room, and we had an agreement that if I got scared and ran out of the room, then I took my own chances, and no harm, no foul. And so I don't know. I didn't get to see. I didn't see anything. And so then, but it was a really cool room. I mean, it's a cool old Hollywood room. Like, from the standpoint, you walked into it, it had a great view. Look down Hollywood Strip, down the street, Hollywood Boulevard, across the street, Man's Chinese Theater. Okay, then the other thing, it was one of those that you walk in and there's like a sitting room. It's like a suite. So there's a sitting room with this old furniture, really cool moldings on the wall, and actually a library, kind of a library, okay? And then there was a fireplace, which hasn't been used in years, and it did cross my mind how much fun it would be to go find some wood and stoke up that fireplace, but I imagine they'd get upset. And then the bathroom, you know, kind of those chicken wire floors, those old fixtures, some marble countertop, one of those big tubs with the feet and everything. And anyway, so the bed, again, was right on the corner, kind of an upper corner of that hotel, where one window's looking right down the boulevard and the other's right across the street. So it was a very cool setting. As far as the ghosts, well, from my experience, maybe not as many ghosts as advertised, but still a great room. And I forget which one it is, but if you can get in there, and I highly recommend it.
A couple more minutes. Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Washington State head coach, back from his travels. We're talking summer vacations. And, coach, a thought here from you. Your last day of school in grade school, do you remember it? How did you celebrate it? My little guy is going to be moving on from fifth grade. I've explained to him that you're supposed to do that. But nonetheless, there's a celebration tomorrow I will be at. But how'd you celebrate getting out of grade school?
Well, they expected you to get out of grade school back then.
Thank you.
I mean, is that the wildest thing? We're graduating from everything around here. We're graduating kindergarten, fifth grade. With all due respect to your son, and with that, I want to send him my very best wishes on his graduation and for graduating fifth grade. He'll always be a hero in my mind. But the thing is, are you kidding me? I mean, fifth grade's a tweener grade.
I can't get out of this. I got to go tomorrow.
Fifth grade's a tweener grade. I mean, fifth grade's like, okay. No, I mean, now I don't know how they split it up nowadays, but when
I'll
I
be going
kid,
to junior high next year in sixth. So.
Oh, really? Because our junior high year was seventh.
Okay. Yeah. So mine was too.
I guess if it's a transition to junior high, that makes more sense, but still not very much. I mean, I don't know what Lincoln's like. But in Cody, Wyoming, there weren't a lot of fifth grade dropouts running around the street and, you know, little kids with cigarettes rolled up in their T-shirts and, you know, thugs beating up the other kids, you know, dead end path.
It's my soccer ball, coach. Yeah,
riding around in souped up tricycles or bicycles or riding around in souped up bicycles, you know. So, I don't know. When I grew up, it was assumed you would successfully get through fifth grade. That was somebody. I mean, call us arrogant, but we felt like it was our birthright.
No, I got you. I got you.
Then, of course, seventh. There's a break in when you go into junior high. You go in there; it's kind of older kids or whatever. And then, see, our junior high had ninth grade too. So,
yep.
Our junior high was seventh, eighth, and ninth, which not everybody does it that way.
Coach, a last thought. No, I wanted to get you a last thought. Sorry to interrupt you on that, but Bill Moose, man, what did Bill do for Washington State football with those new facilities that you guys are in now?
He's a total stud. Bill Moose is a fantastic guy and a personal friend of mine. And, you know, along with Washington State and the vision, you know, he and our, you know, our board of regents, our president, everybody had inspired me to come to Washington State. And he did a tremendous job. And I think he did a great job. I'll tell you what he really brings to a program is tremendous energy. He brings a lot of energy to a program and a lot of optimism. You know, he makes the coaches, the players, the whole program feel like they got the chance to do something special. And, you know, and I thought he did a fantastic job here. And I think also contributed to a fairly seamless transition here with the fine people I have to work with here now.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, we'll get caught up again. I'll give you a shout this summer, and we'll be in touch. Always love just chatting with you, man. It was fun, and that's right. The fifth grade's a birthright. I love it. That's a T-shirt.
No, we figured not. You get through fifth grade. I mean, I can just imagine the expression on my dad's face. Dad, I'm dropping out of fifth grade. No, I'm hitting the streets. I'm going off on my own, you know. I've gone to my share of I've got four kids, and I've gone to my share of graduations, too. And I actually missed one once that they still remind me of, but
I'm sure that's the hey, yeah, you weren't there, yeah, that, yeah,
oh, yeah, they let you know that now,
yeah, coach. We'll talk soon. Thanks again.
All right, I appreciate it.
It's a pirate, Mike Leach, fifth grade, and failure's not an option, junior. If you're listening. Fifth grade promotion. Come on down. Danny and Colton are running the show, the ship, tomorrow. I'm excited for that. They will speak ill of me when I'm away. But I'm out for Junior's big day tomorrow. They had a program when I got out of sixth grade, but it was more of a celebration versus a sense of relief.
So, you know, I was the same way. I had 6th, 7th, and 8th were my middle school years,
right.
But no celebration for getting past 5th grade by any means.
No, and whatever. This thing tomorrow's worth it to get Coach Leach to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was fantastic.
The painting of someone with Marlboro Reds rolled up in their sleeve because they dropped out of 5th grade.
Little greaser kid walking around.
Yeah, right.
The garden rolled up in the white T-shirt.
Pony boy yeah. Forever on the T-shirt. Some leather. Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore is next on the Anthem on the Blackshirts. We'll talk to Jay Bird on the way.
All-State, two-year starter, and rush in for the Big Red, an NFL vet.
Is Dudeness or Duder or El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's Blackshirt Jay Moore with Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. Bird, I want to get your take here to start off, bud, on Roger Goodell's statement when it comes to the national anthem. The official statement and approval's been done by the 32 teams. On-field protests, the unpatriotic perception that the NFL has. You either come out and stand, that's players and team personnel, or you stay in the locker room. Those are your choices. No longer a requirement to be on the field. Fines will be an appropriate discipline, paraphrasing this entire Goodell statement. This thing's had life breathed back into it when it comes to on-field protest and the anthem. I know we talked a ton about it with Michael Rose-Ivy a couple of seasons ago. Give me your take here on what Goodell and the NFL did today.
Well, I think it was a correct move. I think, let's be honest, I mean, NFL is the biggest brand, in my opinion, in America. I think it holds more weight than Apple and Coca-Cola and all that stuff, because how many people that they get tuned in on Sundays, Thursday nights, Saturdays during the playoffs, even preseason games, and the type of revenue they create year in and year out. I mean, hell, the draft is, you know, getting, you know, millions and millions of eyes on it. I mean, that's just insane. So something had to be done, because it was ruining viewership. It was giving people an opinion and a stance against. It was giving them something to be against with NFL, where it really hasn't had that. This is the perfect formula, in my opinion, because, yeah, you come out, you better support the flag, you better support the United States of America, you support the military, you support the people who fought for your freedom decades before you. You support that. If you have an issue, hey, you stay in the locker room. That's your own deal. You know, support what's going on in the USA if you think there's some, you know, racial injustice. Justice or all that stuff that they want to, you know, kneel against. And I get that those stances too as well. But you know what? We're gonna keep this. We're gonna keep that to yourself. You're gonna keep that in the locker room, because you know what? We have a lot of big time partnerships, a lot of corporations that see all this kind of stuff and they don't agree with it. So guess what? Hey, we're gonna pull our Super Bowl ads that bring in $1 billion or whatever it is of revenue for the NFL. We're going to do all this other. We're going to pull this. So they had to do something. I agree with it. You give them an option. You give them a choice. Hey, if you come on the field and you kneel, well, there's a $25,000-$50,000 fine, whatever it possibly could be. So I applaud Goodell. I don't know, I should say applaud him, but I, you know, good on the owners. Good on the everyone else, all 32 owners, to finally put something in there. Mav says hi.
Mav is standing right now too.
Mav is standing.
I like that. Mav and Jay Moore, Husker NFLer, Blackshirt. Jay, you're sensitive to social injustice, what's gone on in the world as well. And I'm sure there's been moments in the locker room where there's been life talks by yourself and teammates as well. So do you understand at all where folks that have kneeled are coming from?
Absolutely. I mean, I can imagine, you know, it's when, you know, you're a person of another color, another race, mm-hmm. and things that go on that, you know, are well reported in the media and stuff like that. You know, I totally understand that. And I think there's, you know, those things need to be addressed. I think we're gaining ways. We're gaining some ground on things, but I think, you know, we're still, you know, I'm not saying it's the 1960s still by any means, but I'm saying things can still be a lot different and can be better. And I, you know what, you have a voice. That's why the United States has, you know, we honor all the military and the people that come before us, because they're able to fight to give us a voice and for those people. And I think if you want to take a stance on it, you should. I just think, I understand it from the NFL's perspective as well, because you are doing something and I don't want to say tainting the brand, but other people view it that way. And from the NFL's perspective, they can't have that. They can't, because it's ruining the brand that they that they have built and established over a long time. So I get both sides of the table. I just think this gives everyone an option going forward.
Jay Moore's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at JayMoore44, Blackshirt Husker NFL, or follow him on Twitter. Jay, how do you think the players are going to react to it? What's some of the things you've seen on social media? I know the Jets co-owner said he would pay for and take care of any fine that's handed out to a player that ends up protesting. What's your read on the current NFL and just some of your former guys that you know around the league? Do you think they agree with this decision here to stay in or stand?
I'm sure some agree. I'm sure some still say hell. You know, I mean, some of these guys, you know, are making so much money that they're going to say hell. Screw it. I'll get fined $25,000, $35,000, $45,000, $55,000, whatever it may be, whatever that fine may be, just to prove a point. And I know guys have gotten fined, you know, $10,000 every game they played in for the whole year, just so they could wear a certain pair of cleats or a certain pair, or wear their socks or their uniform a certain way. They didn't care. Like, hell, screw it. You know, it's just that's the kind of silly money, you know, some of those guys make. So I could totally see a guy, you know, stepping up and saying, I'll still kneel. I'm okay with forking over a $50,000-$60,000 check to the NFL. And I still see some guys saying, all right, great. I've been on the fence in the years past. Now I'm just going to stay in the locker room, and I'm going to do my little pregame thing and handle it this way. Because let's be honest, I mean, all in college, you're never out on the field for the national anthem. That's really just an NFL type of game. I've a few universities do it, but NFL, you know, makes you guys out there to honor the flag. So I'm sure guys will take their fines, and some guys will stay in the locker room. I'm just glad it finally gives players an option to kind of stay out of it. And I think that's what's best.
Jay, let's talk black shirts for a second. Scott Frost in his interview with Kevin Suits touched on and was asked about the black shirts this fall. The defense will start the fall without black shirts. And I'm comfortable with Scott Frost's understanding of the black shirts. You are a black shirt. What's your take on this? What's your reaction to really Frost trying to get a certain mentality associated with wearing that black shirt?
Yeah, I think as a whole, the program as a whole, Frost is trying to revamp the whole thing. He is trying to resurrect it and kind of trying to get rid of everything that happened post 2003. And you know, he's trying to create something and build something, and he's going to do it his own way. And players are going to get on board with it. And you know what? If you don't have him by the beginning of the year, that's fine. You know what? He doesn't have guys that are established within his system yet. You know, whether it's 5 guys, 10 guys, 15 guys, he doesn't have those dogs yet that he knows he can count on day in and day out within his program yet. Now, you could go on recalling some past film, but still, that's someone else's program. That's something you did differently in the past. He wants to recognize those guys who are willing to do the right thing, play the right way, have the right mentality within this program going forward. And it's probably going to take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Hell, it might take the whole season. You might not even see him the whole season if he doesn't see what he wants. I mean, he's going to make sure he gets things done the right way. So I have zero issue with him approaching it this way.
You know, in the interview answer, you know, he wants guys to really earn them. It means something. Toughness, leadership, team first mentality, the effort that's there, just that motor that's always going. I kind of applaud it. It sounds to me like it's a page out of Coach McBride's tenure, and I know you fought for and earned black shirts 3 years of your 4 at Nebraska, which is super impressive, and there was a standard there. I think that's the biggest thing. Do you think the fan base and media will wear it out if there's not if they're not earned at some point? Do you think Frost will handle that okay, or will he get annoyed by it like Bo did?
No, I think Frost will handle it just fine. Frost is, you know, he's pretty cool and calm. I don't think he'll be I don't think he'll feel the pressure from the media. It'll get addressed day in and day out. I'm sure he'll get asked a question, you know, every Monday after a game to say when the Blackshirts are going to get a handout, if they earned them. You're going to run into all that. I'm sure he's going to give the same old answer, and he's not going to get flustered with it. He's going to do the things his way he wants, and that's just fine. That's okay. Yes, it'll be worn out. I mean, you know, hell,
it's almost June, and I'm asking you about it already. Sorry.
Right. I mean, it'll be worn out, but he's going to get it right. He's going to get his program right the way he wants it. And everyone better, you know, get on board with it or deal with it. And I'm okay with that. It's time to get this thing going back in the right direction and quit, messing around. And he's the right guy to do this. And it'll be just fine.
Last thought here, Jay, about 60 seconds, bud. What's the standard in your eyes to get a black shirt?
Well, it's a lot. I mean, it's doing the things right on and off the field. It's not, you know, obviously it's practicing and playing the right way, but it's taking that same mentality, being a good person, taking care of your schoolwork. Not saying you got to be a straight A student, but going to class, maintaining decent grades. But I think the biggest thing is just day in and day out is giving your full effort, whether it's in the classroom, it's in the weight room, it's on the practice field, and obviously it's on Saturdays on the field. You get a guy that's fully bought in Monday through Friday on the practice field, and he works his ass off day in and day out. You get a guy that does that, those other things will take care of itself, in my opinion. That's where it's got to start. A guy that takes every rep like it's a game rep, you know, even though you might be going against a walk-on tackle from Fremont, you do those things and you approach it that way, that every day is game day. And I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna give it my all, and I'm gonna raise some hell, and everything will follow. And that's the kind of mentality you have to have. And I didn't have it right away. I learned that. And then the greatest thing is you have that mentality, you start seeing results, and then having that mentality, you become addicted to it, and that's how you begin to live your life. Is every day I'm gonna wake up, I'm gonna give her hell, I'm gonna bust my ass, and the results will follow. You can't get too caught up in results right away. There's gonna be some crappy days, but you keep pushing your foot on that gas pedal. You'll eventually get there.
Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer. Jay Bird, we'll get caught up soon. Thanks for the time, bud.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, buddy.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
I'm reading this story, and it's about a frustrated pitcher named Carson Smith, not Carson Schmidt, although Junior someday will mess up his shoulder out of frustration throwing his glove because he's got a temper. It's been a reality with this Red Sox. At least it's not carpal tunnel from Fortnite. That epidemic hasn't been passed on to Carson Smith of Boston, but he's a relief pitcher with Boston, lost his mind, threw his glove, and now he's got shoulder issues. Please explain this to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially what they're calling it is a shoulder subluxation. So when we think about instability of the shoulder, there's kind of two classifications. You know, one is the shoulder kind of partially comes out of place. That's what we call a subluxation, a little bit of looseness. Sometimes it'll come out maybe half or three quarters of the way out and kind of perch itself just on the rim of the socket. And then, of course, everybody knows about a full-on dislocation where the whole ball portion slides all the way out of the joint, kind of wedges itself over the front of the socket. That'd be a full-on dislocation. So for him, they're classifying subluxation, so kind of slipped out of place a little bit. Maybe sounds a little bit harmless, but it actually is a pretty significant issue. In order to get your shoulder to kind of perch itself up on that part of the rim of the glenoid, which is the socket, have a subluxation that you really do stretch a lot of the tissues around the joint, in particular the rotator cuff tissues, the biceps. And then ultimately what surrounds the joint is a tissue called a capsule. The capsule is basically a balloon-like structure that surrounds the joint and kind of separates it from the rest of the body. So, of course, pretty significant trauma to all those areas when you have even just what we call a subluxation. The issue with that, you know, going forward is obviously now he's got a guy who subluxed his shoulder, so you start to worry about, is he going to now have chronic kind of instability that's pretty clinically significant? And then also, how long is he going to be in the DL just to kind of rehab from essentially a rotator cuff and bicep strain, capsular strain, which is essentially what this is.
Well, Carson Smith, again, Smith of the Red Sox, apologetic about the quote freak injury. How much force, what type of temper tantrum do you have to get your shoulder out of socket halfway?
Yeah, exactly. Great question. So you think about that. Obviously, we haven't, you know, laid hands upon him to see really, you know, how loose was he beforehand. But to do something like that in a normal person, pretty significant effort in order to sublux your shoulder out of place. Typically, that's something more that's, you know, fairly traumatic. You fall on your shoulder or you try to arm tackle somebody at a football field and they kind of tear your arm off. And those type of things are the things that typically do that. And so, obviously, a pretty mammoth effort to try to get that shoulder to sublux out of place. Clearly very frustrated, which obviously it happens at that level, any level for that matter, people who are very competitive. But a good learning lesson for those around him, and in particular our younger population, about what not to do with your frustrations.
Count to 10. Go for a walk. Storm the dugout. Go Melito Perez with a bat on the cooler, but don't hurt yourself with the glove, Chuck.
Right.
I see the post-game interview on this, too. It's like, well, it's not like I punched a wall, because you've seen and heard pitchers like think they're going to bust through concrete, and it doesn't work out. And he throws his glove all the time, is what Carson Smith is saying. So long term here, you mentioned this could be a potentially, devastating injury. Moving forward, what is the amount of work he can do, the rest he needs? Let's look at that mesh point of what can he still do, what can't he do with his arm? If it's teetering right there, is this something that, look, they're going to give it time before they look at surgery? Is it something they'll have to have surgery on? What's worst case scenario? And of course, is best case scenario, you miss some time and you're back at it?
Yeah, you know, shoulder instability is a really kind of fascinating topic for us sports guys with throwers. If you think about, and we've probably mentioned this a little bit before on the radio, if you think about a thrower's shoulder and you think about how much velocity some of those folks can generate, then you think about, okay, how is that possible that you can do that with your shoulder? And so when you think about all those really high-level pitchers that can generate, you know, just incredible velocity, 90, 100 miles an hour, to do that, you really do have to have some kind of natural tendency towards kind of looseness in your shoulder. So your shoulder's probably a little bit sloppy. That's the only way you can really kind of generate that kind of velocity and that kind of, energy, kinetic energy and stored energy to bring that through. And so a lot of our shoulders kind of battle kind of some chronic instability, but it's controllable. It's not clinical enough that, you know, they're having subluxation events or dislocation events. And so they always kind of walk that fine line of not being too unstable, but being unstable enough that you can generate the velocity you need. And so when you do something like what he did, then obviously you've started to tip that balance more towards the instability side, which that can become a huge problem for a pitcher. Because once you start to tilt to the other direction and become too unstable and have kind of a way too sloppy shoulder, if you will, there's not a lot you can do about that in terms of getting them back to their previous level. So if you go in and try to tighten that up surgically, you're going to change them significantly. And that's always the big battle with, you know, our pitchers that come in. And most high-level pitchers always have abnormal MRIs. Well, I have lots of those patients that come in the clinic asking what to do about this abnormal MRI. Those folks are so much better off if you don't operate on them, let them rehab, and they do really well. I mean, if you MRI'd every major league pitcher's shoulder, it probably all looks terrible in an MRI, but they don't need surgery if you do that. Some do, but there's very few that do. So it kind of brings up an interesting point there that, you know, this gentleman may have put himself on the other side of that instability line and potentially could end up having some pretty significant throwing issues going forward.
Is there going to be a closer watch with pitch count? Is there going to be more ice time, more heat, more ice when it comes to recovery methods? How do you move forward with that on this relief pitcher for Boston?
You know, you take a couple weeks to do some simple, kind of easy stretch stuff to make sure the capsulefish doesn't get too tight. You know, you do your classic, rise, your rest, your ice compression, a couple weeks off there. And then you want to start him back into, obviously the stretch part's important, but really the most important part is you want to be able to rebuild those muscles around the shoulder. You want to be able to reestablish appropriate kind of coordination of the shoulder blade or the scapula. Those are probably the two most important things, is the strength and the scapular motion. Those are the things that kind of control where that ball kind of sits in the socket, and that's super important. That always is kind of problematic in a lot of our throwers. And so that's really where his focus should be. Difficult to say how long it'll get him back. Obviously, we're not there laying our hands on him to see how significant of subluxation was this. But it could be a 6 or 8 week process for him. Hopefully it's faster than that, but it might take that long to get back.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Ligament Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Carson Smith. Had a bit of a tirade and frustration and then popped his arm out, throwing his glove. How severe, we don't know, but it could be serious with this temper tantrum. What's the most irate you've seen an athlete get?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I've seen so many. probably the more, maybe more entertaining and also on the sad side of the story was I can remember a gentleman that played at a very high level at one of the universities I used to cover that was about 6 or 7 weeks out from his ACL reconstruction and was down on the sidelines where he wasn't supposed to be and had ditched his crutches and braced everything, and he decided to celebrate with the running back who had just scored a touchdown and did a couple of chest bumps and then realized he had re-torn his ACL.
Wow.
That was pretty devastating.
That's not good. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for the time today.
Absolutely, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on a Wednesday. Busy one today. Many thanks to Jay Moore. And, of course, great to get caught up with Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity and the Pirate Mike Leach. You want to catch the podcast today? Mike Shuhart was in HailVarsity.com or iTunes. Select portions will be on ESPN Lincoln. The full podcast, iTunes or HailVarsity.com. And some blips will be out on the Hail Varsity and ESPN Lincoln Twitter handle. Some of the greatest hits today. Soybeans. And you see that sign in the soybean field. It's AgriGold. Customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. And the approach to soybeans, no different from AgriGold. High-performance soybeans from a brand you know, you trust, and you love. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Visit Danny Burke. When it comes to thoughts on game number 5 tonight. Do or die for the men in green. Things have shifted around. Momentum's changed. It's a home game, which is good for Boston. But can they snap out of this funk? Does Cleveland actually win a third straight? Or does Boston do Boston things and we get to have some fun with evil Brad Stevens here the next couple of days?
Yes, it is do or die for the Celtics, 100% absolutely, when you're going against LeBron James. This game really, really, really scares me, though, on a gambling perspective.
It's minus one.
Yeah, and in favor of the Celtics.
I think it'll be close.
Yeah, it's going to be right
there. It's going to be a lot like last night, where somebody's going to jump out, got to survive the wave, got to battle back.
Right.
Then how do you close?
So it's going to come down to if the Cavs obviously could just keep it up, the role players step up, and now we're just going to see, can the Celtics young players handle it? Can they handle this pressure? Can they have good composure, and can they stay consistent? I think I'm going to go with the Cavs tonight. Like I've been saying this whole series, until LeBron proves me wrong, I got to still ride with him, unfortunately.
Here's what I don't think happens. I don't think Boston misses 19 paint shots tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They did. You had great rim protection. You had a lot of block shots by Cleveland. That thing can be swayed. You might get some whistles in the garden tonight that you didn't get in Quicken Loans. That's a fact. I think LeBron's going to be locked in. Here's the thing, though. Does LeBron have a bad night tonight?
Does Marcus Morris live up to his own name, the LeBron stopper?
Right. Does the supporting cast actually step up tonight for Cleveland if LeBron's off? You just saw Durant have a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a bad game eventually. I mean, LeBron can't be insanely efficient above 50% triple-double 40 a night, can he? I mean, he's been doing it. He makes it look normal. It's not. Give me Boston, 103-100.
Okay, so I'll go Cavs 108-105. And, I mean, let's see if Kyle Korver can keep it up, too. Let's see if J.R. Smith doesn't chuck up dumb shots and they can just bolt hit it when they're open.
They're going to happen. It's just a matter of not if they go in.
And the timing of when they do it is key, too.
It's a big poise moment for Boston.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time talking black shirts. Scott Frost, good stuff today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Danny and Colton will rock. Yes, fifth grade graduations, we'll all be.